I decided to go to the United States recently when I arrived back in the UK. Hello, Callum. We're police officers with Sussex Police. We'd like to talk to you. You're currently detained under Section 3 of the Terrorism Act. All my devices were taken away from me. So in the Terrorism Act, human rights go out the window. When they ask for your PIN code, you have to provide it. If you do not provide it, the Terrorism Act then says that you are guilty of an offense. So they demanded to know when I left, where I went, tell us everything about your life. We can only speculate because they never actually told me. They never explained. The most interesting aspect for them being really interested in my trip to the US. I'm like, what? I've been over to the US to people about what they feel about the election, and the people who voted for Trump, it was amazing. Everyone in Britain's looking at it with like licking lips, thinking, yeah, we could do that. And then the guy's secondhand man, Elon Musk, spends a week or two just shining a light on the British state and every crime they've ever committed. By, for example, ignoring rapists because they're the certain skin tone. Yeah, if I was the British state, I would be feeling pretty terrified right now. Because you've now got this massive ability to share information. And what information is being shared? That your state is probably one of the worst in the West.
Hello, 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 and welcome to this edition of The Jolly Heretic. Now, as some of you may know, I have interviewed and interacted with quite a few YouTube-type people in my time running The Jolly Heretic public house, but none of them have I spent more time with than Mr. Callum Darragh, who indeed I've made a film with. I've spent literally the best part of a week traveling around Finland with him. We shared a bedroom three times. He's actually stayed at my house. He's the only person that I've got to know through all of this YouTube, you know, baseness that's literally been to Jolly Heretic HQ, stayed at my house, been in this very cellar. And yet it turns out the British government have reasonable suspicion that he's a fucking terrorist. So, I mean, good God, I dread to think what could happen to me. Thank heavens my house is still here. But in order to inquire as to if he indeed is a terrorist, I have Callum here today. So, Callum, hello.
Yeah, I mean, if you look under your chair, you should find a bomb. And when this interview's over, goodbye.
That's what that ticking has been. I've been
asking. Yeah, it's a long game.
It's an even longer game than the bomb that the IRA put in that hotel in Brighton in 1984. I mean, you know, it's a seriously, seriously long game. Hello, so Callum, thanks for coming on. And so you have been before. I always want to ask you about how you got into what you do, but the main thing I want to focus on is what have your adventures been? You've had your adventures in Afghanistan, you've had your adventures in America, you've had your adventures in all kinds of places, Russia, whatever. But you had a bit of an adventure recently returning to the UK, and I wondered if you could possibly tell me a little bit about it.
Sure. So for people who don't know, my work is I go to interesting places, make videos about them, what's their culture, etc. And then also explain some of the nuances of that country in weird countries like Afghanistan and whatnot. It's the new government. And then come home, make videos about it, publish them, and then sell people stuff that I found in country. It's not highly controversial, I would have thought, of all the things. But I decided to go to the United States recently. I was then down to El Salvador, and then back to the US, and then home. And the reason I spent so much time in the US is I wanted to make a film about the fall in Vegas made up there. In El Salvador, I was making a video about what El Salvador's like. And well, it's not a risky country. Neither of those is it advised you don't travel against. And in the US, I stayed for a long time because I was wintering with the Americans to find out what life was like in the US. And when I arrived back in the UK with all the other random tourists from my destination, well, the e-gates don't work when I scan my passport.
Which airport was this?
Gatwick. So the e-gates don't scan my passport. It doesn't work. So you have to go up to the desk. Then behind the desk, I see these three different people all looking at me in plain clothes. I'm like, okay, they're not my friends and family. So you walk up to the desk, guy takes your passport, doesn't scan for him. He's looking at you weird. And then they came up, took the passport and went, we'll take it from here. Hello, Callum. We're police officers with Sussex Police. We'd like to talk to you. You're currently detained under Section 3 of the Terrorism Act.
That's what they immediately said to you?
Pretty much, yes.
Three blokes?
Two blokes and a lady.
A lady. Was she a pretty lady?
She actually looked like one of my old electronics professors. And considering she might be watching this, she's very pretty, great lady, perfectly polite. All of them are polite, actually, and very good looking.
Yeah, very good looking, and not at all an appalling coward that does evil for money. So you went away with these pleasant and entirely non-conformist people who are definitely not the kinds of people that would say we are only obeying orders if the regime changed. What happened there? Well, they were a little side room, was it? I suppose.
Yeah. So there's in any airport, there's always side rooms for these purposes. So you get taken in there. First thing of interest was to make sure all my devices were put on airplane mode, sealed, and taken away from me. So they demanded my PIN codes. I happen to know already.
This might surprise demanding your PIN codes. A lot of people watching that aren't British. So could you explain to them what this terrorism act actually means in terms of your rights as a human being?
Sure. So, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't know the history maybe as well as you do. But my understanding is after 9/11, the Terrorism Act gets updated in the United Kingdom, as well as the Patriot Act in the US. And in the United Kingdom, what's decided then and since is that it's basically a great way of detaining people and taking away all their rights, so you can do whatever you want. So in the Terrorism Act, you don't need reasonable suspicion to stop someone at a port of entry. So an airport or a seaport. Those places, human rights kind of go out the window. So you have no right to keep such things. But you also have no right to remain silent, and you have to hand over your passwords to any electronic device because the police want access to it to then check out what you've got in there, you know, all your messages, your photos of your family and everything else. So when they ask for your PIN code, you have to provide it. If you do not provide it, the Terrorism Act then says that you are guilty of an offense. Presumably it's interfering or obstructing an investigation. And I happen to know that various other right-wingers had tried to come to this country, either because they were foreign or they were returning Brits, and they'd have the same treatment. And those who refused to give their passcodes were charged with this offence. So you then get a charge under the Terrorism Act, and then you have to go to court and deal with that.
So Tommy Robinson was charged with this offence?
He is one of them, yeah. And so Lauren Southern was charged with it, if you may remember, when she tried to come to the United Kingdom. I think, Brittany Pettibone and Martin Zellner, two other foreigners who tried to come in, were right-wing. And then natively, the other person that comes to mind is Paul Golding. He came back from the Russian Federation on holiday and immediately was detained under the Terrorism Act. They demanded his PIN codes and he told them to go themselves. And then they charged him with a crime, which is not handing over your PIN. Now, I have enough of a problem trying to go to strange places and get visas without having to list in the criminal history section, you know, terrorism charge for such and such.
What if you say you can't remember your PIN?
I don't know. I mean, a lot of people gave the idea of what if you just played the idiot, essentially. My gut feeling is they just wouldn't believe it and charge you. And what are you going to do? I mean, it's not a very great excuse if you have to go for a judge and be like, oh, yes, this phone I carry constantly. No idea how to open it. Like it's not that convincing. I mean, I guess you could try. No one seems to have yet that I'm aware of. But if there's a case like that, I mean, let me know because that's funny.
Interesting. I wonder if you could like smash the phone on the ground the moment they tell you to. Anyway, look. So that you're taken away to the side room, and first of all, then you have to hand over all your electronic devices. And this is a bugger for you because you've been away in America filming, and you've got your laptop, you've got your. You go pro, you've got all kinds of stuff for all kinds of footage. And what happens then?
So they take that off, put it in little bags, log what it is. They then took all of my property, so my backpack, the stuff I was carrying, everything else. That all just disappears with one officer. And what they did with that is basically just unpack everything and find any more electronic devices they could take. So that's where they found the SD cards, the hard drive, because I didn't think to give them that. Because what the hell? I didn't think about it. I mean, what was funny is they took the SD card out of my GoPro to search that, but then seized the GoPro as well, which doesn't have anything on it because it's a blank camera. So that's just weird. But whatever. So that the guy goes and takes that. He then repacks all your stuff. He broke a few of my things doing that. Asshole. Got this book about Bitcoin, which I was really hoping to keep, and now it's all like bent and stuff. Some other things I wanted, which are all destroyed, so I threw them away. Oh, well, you then get put in a room. They tell you you're being detained under Section 3, like we said. What's going to happen now is that we're going to process you. We're going to take your name, address, all that stuff. We're going to take your fingerprints, take pictures of your face from every different side. And then you have the right to talk to a lawyer of your choosing before we start with the interrogation. So I don't have a lawyer. So I said, can I have the duty solicitor? They gave me that one. So you wait a while, phone call them, and then they left me in the room. So I talked to this lady. I'm like, hey, I'm detained under this section of the Terrorism Act. Don't know why. What the hell's going on? What can I do? And this duty solicitor's response was, I don't know. Because you can't explain why you're there. They don't know why you're there. The police haven't told you why you're there because we haven't got to the interrogation yet. So like, what are you meant to do? So she asked, have you engaged any terrorist activity or working for a hostile power? No. Well, then they probably want to ask you about your trips. I'm like, yeah, I got that.
But if you did have a lawyer, then presumably his number would be on your mobile and they've taken that away.
A whole other problem. A lot of people recommended if you do have a lawyer, you have a piece of paper in your wallet with his number on. Which, again, wouldn't really work because at this point they'd taken everything off me. Like, it took all my property and then, like, patted me down, scanned me for everything.
So you should keep a bit of paper with your lawyer's number on in your pants.
Yeah. You know, the little sleeve. Just put it in there.
Yeah.
So that was a waste of time talking to that lawyer. What is the situation is apparently if they can ask a question in the interview and then I can demand to call up the lawyer to have them interpret if that question is overbearing or such. But that's about it. That's all the legal representation you're allowed. You're not allowed a lawyer in the room, which, okay, whatever.
What would that do to prevent you from cooperating with them? There's a lawyer there. If anything, it would intimidate them. That's why it's not meant to. I mean, it's extraordinary you can't have a lawyer in the room.
Presumably, that's the reason they're not allowed. So the situation is you are detained. There is no suspicion of you. There is no reason or suspicion as to why you are detained. Too bad. We don't need one. You have no right to the lawyer in the room with you. And you also have no right to remain silent. So we're now going to ask you a series of questions. We can detain you for up to 6 hours legally. So we keep you for 6 hours after your long flight to the country. And you have no right to remain silent. You have to answer all the questions, which you have no idea what any of this is about.
And do you have a legal obligation to tell the truth?
Don't know about that. I would presume so. Because they did threaten me with perjury. Like, if you commit perjury in the interview, you can do
that. Because I was threatened with that. I had to give an interview to a Finnish police officer about a crime I'd witnessed. And he said, this interview will be read out in court. And so you must tell me the truth. That was made clear to me in Finland anyway, but they're different from you, from Britain. So what kind of questions do they ask you?
So the conversation went like this. It began with, and this was the trip they were most interested in terms of detail, was the one I just did. So the trip to the United States and El Salvador and back to the United States. So they demanded to know when I left, where I went, how long I spent in this place, and then I went to another place, how long did I spend there? What did I do in these places? Who did I meet? What did I speak about? So that was the US and El Salvador as well, and then back home. So to give an example, so I went to Vegas to film, then I went down to Florida for some work, back to El Salvador, back to Vegas, and then somewhere else in the US, and then back home. And so they wanted to know every step of that journey, who I was meeting, where I was going, and why I was there. And then when I mentioned a name, they're like, what does he do? Where does he work? Blah, blah, blah. So that was the first thing. The next question then moved on to all the other stamps in my passport, but they weren't interested in half of them, or most of them even. So the first interest, I think, was just in general, where have you been? So I mentioned all the different places I've been. Russia obviously stands out, so they want to ask me about that. And they asked me about all the different trips to Russia, what I did, who I met, where I went, what I spoke about. And I'm just telling them the whole time, go to the YouTube channel. Like, I'm not hiding anything. It's all on the YouTube channel. Like, I mentioned getting interrogated by the Russian police there. It's like all the details of that. After that, the conversation was a bit weird. So I brought up Afghanistan. So I was like, you probably want to hear about Afghanistan, right? And they're like, if you want. Okay, because I was imagining after I come back from Afghanistan, for people who don't know, I went there after the Taliban took over the country and we interviewed the Taliban. So I was expecting to come back and be interviewed by counterterrorism to ask me at that time, did you join the Taliban? And instead, there was no interview. And then
you've put up basically a relatively sympathetic video about Taliban Afghanistan.
And yeah, I gave them the facts on the ground.
And you're friends with and have worked with somebody that's done likewise.
So Lord Miles.
Lord Miles, right. So who's also been stopped. And God, I've also interviewed. I've got to go on. And so I would have thought that was either that or the fact that you had been in Russian-occupied Ukraine or wherever it is you've been. Is that right? Russian-occupied Ukraine?
So the Donbass region.
Right, Donbass, exactly. I would have thought that would be the thing that would get you on the radar. So I'm wondering...
Because if that had happened, if that was the primary reason, I would have thought that when I came back from those trips, that's when you would stop me, right?
Not if the government has become more paranoid about dissenters and things like that in the interim.
A lot of people seem to think that. But the thing that stood out to me, the reason I bring up Afghanistan so much, is that if you're counterterrorism, like if you're concerned about young British men with a beard going to sandy place and becoming radicalized, guy who goes to Afghanistan to meet the Taliban seems like a pretty red flag. Like, go and talk to him, find out if he's joined Islamists or whatever. And when I'm telling them about Afghanistan, I mean, they just couldn't be more bored in terms of professionalism. Like, they're interested in the funny stories about them trying to bomb me, for example, you know, talking about how beautiful me and Miles were and whatnot. But apart from that, they're just like, yeah, that's just not a concern for us, the terrorism police. You're going to meet in the Taliban. Like, all right. That's right. That's the British state's modus operandi when it came to that. So then the conversation, I finished up on the trips. And then I'm trying to remember the way the whole conversation went, but I'm pretty sure then it moved to my life story. So they were like, tell us everything about your life. I mean, keep in mind, we've been talking for like 2 hours at this point. So then I tell them I was born here. I went to school here. I went to college here. I went to university this place, did this. Who did you work for jobs? I worked here, worked here, worked here for this person doing this. So I had to tell them about my old job working at Lodices, for example, talking about that we covered British and American politics. Then they're asking what political connections I've got out of all of this, who am I still in contact with, especially foreign political connections. So I told them about Dominik Tarzynski, for example, which again is, I've interviewed him on my channel. Yeah, for people who don't know, he's a Polish member of parliament. And he was one of the, I believe, first guys that started the Polish Independence Day rally that's so much expanded and is now a national treasure of an event every single year. And so people like that, they were interested in, who was I talking to politically? The conversation then got to what I thought was the most interesting aspect for them, which is my opinions. So it started off with, the first question was, what's your opinion of President Vladimir Putin? I'm like, what? He's not my president? He's not really my problem. Okay, he has done these things. These are just facts. Russia used to be like this when he came to power. It's now like this. Like, all I can do when I deal with foreign places is describe the reality on the ground. Like, here's what it was, here's what it is now. Whatever. It's not my problem to debate or solve or complain about politics in a foreign country. So after I tell them this, they then say, "Ah, but what about the war in Ukraine and their fight for freedom?" Like, again, not my bloody issue. Like, I told them I tried to come to Ukraine because I wanted to go and do both sides of the war, but everyone I spoke to in Ukraine was kind of hostile about the idea. Then the conversation moved to the West. So what's your opinions on the West in general? What's your opinions on the UK, UK leadership, and the way the UK is going? And then UK politics, who do you know in UK politics? My time in UKIP, for example, United Kingdom Independence Party. So I did some work there back in the day, trying to get...
So you don't have the right of a secret ballot if you're interviewed by these people. You can't say, I'm not telling you my opinions on the UK leadership and politics. I have a secret ballot. They basically want you to tell them what you vote.
That would, if you didn't tell them, you would be interfering with an investigation.
If you didn't tell them what you vote?
If they asked for it, you have no right to remain silent. So I don't know why that wouldn't be a valid question.
But they didn't ask what you vote?
Not specifically, no. But like, I told them about my political activity and then they were like, well, who did you meet? What did you do? Why were you there? And okay, so I told them about my activity to try and get Count Dankula unarrested, to get the law he was charged under removed, and things like this. And when we dealt with the opinion section, then they were pretty happy. I mean, it'd been 4 hours. They take these blank pieces of paper and filled them in with scribbles. of whatever they found interesting for what I said. And then they said, okay, you're free to go. We're going to keep your devices. I now don't have a phone, so I can't organize getting picked up from the train station. You know, I live 4 hours from Gatwick. Can't call anyone. They take me to the train station. I did have a ticket, but obviously by now that train has left. So I had to buy a brand new ticket at my own expense and then organize coming back a week later to get my devices and then go home again.
Oh, they don't transfer them to the nearest police station. You have to go back to the airport and get them.
The traditional thing to do is go back and get them. Apparently, if you live far enough away, they will organize a courier service. But I mean, that's like, they've got my livelihoods. You know, they've got the footage I need to edit to make videos to make my money. So it was imperative I get it back as soon as possible. So I was just like, screw it. I'm just giving up a day of my life. Go drive there, drive back. And yeah, that's what we did.
And I see. And so how did you, when you realized what was happening and knowing the fact that you know various people that have gone through the same thing, how did you feel? Did you have a sense of that it was bound to happen eventually? Or how did you feel?
So I had that when I came back from Afghanistan, like I mentioned. I mean, I landed, I'm pretty sure I landed in the UK in the Afghan garb still. Like I got the hat, the robes, and then my big suitcase. And I look like crap because it's been a long-ass journey. And I turned up, I went to the customs area where you're meant to declare what you're bringing into the UK, if it's certain goods. I bring out the laptop, you know, the suitcase, my bag, and everything. I'm just sort of standing around because I'm expecting that they've expected me to come back. And I stood there for a good 5 minutes looking around, and there's just nobody there. So I'm like, oh, screw this. I'm tired. So then I just went to passport control and went straight through. Okay. Literally no one wanted to talk. So, okay, if you don't want to talk about Afghanistan, I come back from Russia after going to Donbass, no one wanted to talk. Fine. I mean, we presume as people in the West, after what we know from Edward Snowden, that all of our messages online, etc., are all being monitored anyway. They probably are. So I was thinking maybe that's the way they're dealing with it if they have a concern. Or they've made the correct assessment, which is that I'm not a threat to national security. I'm just going to these countries to film what's there and then putting them on YouTube. Again, you can see it online. It's not much of a cover story. So that's what I thought. And then when I got detained, I'm like, the hell is this about? Because I've been away from the UK for 3 months at this point. And the big thing I saw playing out in the UK was there was a massive spotlight from Elon Musk and X on the British government. These specific disgusting issues of the grooming gangs, for example, the Southport killing seems to have.
Have you looked at any of those things? Forgive me. I mean, I've watched quite a few of your videos, but I can't remember. Have you looked at any of those things in your videos?
So when I did a video about tourism in England, we went from an area that was 0.0% ethnic English, according to the government, the ONS census, to an area that is 100.0% English. And the point was showing, hey, look, here's where the English people are. If you go to London, for example, you're not going to find them. If you're looking for English culture as a tourist, it's not there. People don't seem to know this outside of the UK. It's educational. When I went to an area up north in Savilltown that was also 0.0%, we mentioned, I mean, there's not good relations between the English ethnic group and the Pakistani migrant ethnic group that have come in the last few decades because of that problem. But other than that, I try and keep the channel sort of politically neutral because it's about describing what's there. So the atmosphere in that town, for example, was not very welcoming. The first guy we ran into with the camera, Pakistani guy, was like, why are you here? What are you filming for? And trying to explain that's probably the reason, is that these communities who are Pakistani not only have this tension with the English ethnic group in the UK, but also are a bit defensive for that reason.
A lot of them probably don't film because they're there illegally.
That may also be true. I couldn't tell you with that particular place, but it wouldn't surprise me.
When I can't find enough base knowledge to feed the inner workings of my mind, and I go on to Audible, and all I can find is warmed-up diarrhea by people like Adam Rutherford and Angela Saini, I sometimes don't know what to do. But that's why I use Legion.com. Legion.com gets the most based books, summarises them into key salient points, and reads them to you in 25 enthralling minutes, whether it's my own books or whether it's Who We Are and How We Got Here by David Reich, a fascinating book which allows us to understand in much more depth the evolution of man using archaeogenetics, taking old skeletons, analysing the different alleles and telling you exactly how we evolved. Whatever based book it is, Legiont.com is the one for me.
I was in London. I was filming in Bethnal Green, and there was a definite threat conveyed to me subtly by this guy. I was trying to work. He was giving out menus for a restaurant or something. This guy, he didn't speak English. He only spoke Bengali, and I was getting irritated by this. And I said to him, "Do you speak English? Do you speak English?" And this guy comes up and says, "I speak English. I speak English." And we talked, and I explained that the only word that I understood of this language was garam, which means hot. Like garam chai, chai chai, garam chai. And he went, "Oh, yeah, yeah. Don't be too garam yourself, yeah?" That's what he said to me. "Don't be too garam yourself." Oh, I said, "I'm not particularly garam. Are you garam?" "Oh, no. Oh, no." I said, "Well, okay, we're both not garam then." And he was basically saying, "Watch it." But doing so in a very, garam, of course, meaning hot and spicy. Like, "You're in our area. Watch it, whitey." When we were on that boat, and we were not able to get off at Orland because nobody told us. I suppose the boat would only be there for 15 minutes, and there was no announcement because we were on deck. I suppose thinking about it, it might be because the people of Orland knew of your dangerous reputation and had asked the staff, the crew, not to let us off the boat, such that you would endanger their island, as the English once did, by invading it in 1854.
I mean, if we were a terrorist threat to the people, we would land on their shores. Of course, they sent us to Stockholm, where we would, you know, just blend in with the locals.
Yeah, exactly.
Which would make sense.
Mm, perfect sense. A bit odd. I mean, I noticed that, though, that when you realised what happened, you were very irritated, but you remained calm. You were like, "Great. I'm not going to Orland." You didn't lose your... Did you manage to remain perfectly calm in this situation?
I forget who it is, but it's the things you can't control. Why get angry at them? And it's good advice. So they drag me into this room, for example, and I'm realizing I'm not going to be here for 10 minutes. That's just not how this is going to go. So sit down. "Yeah, whatever. Can I have some water, please?" And they get me water. And they're scanning me or whatever, and I'm just like, "You don't want to look at my boots." And they're like, "Yeah, we do. You got to take off your shoes." And I'm like, "They stink, my friend." So just whatever, like just calm about the whole thing, because what can you do? As I mentioned, I was expecting this when I came back from those trips. The fact that I came back from the US and had this inconvenience, you know, it did annoy me quite a bit, because it's one of those places where you come back and you think it's gonna be fine. I'm coming back from the US. Like, how many hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of Brits go to the US and back every year? It's a complete non-suspicious, normal interaction.
Did you have to give your fingerprints?
Yeah, so there are quite a few governments that got my fingerprints now, which includes the British one.
Did you have to give a saliva sample? So you were essentially treated like a literal criminal, because that's what happens if you're a literal criminal. It's a saliva sample. And I understand that you have the right under the Act to refuse to do that, and that's not a crime. And then you get taken to a police station, and the police and the detective sergeant decides whether you have to give a saliva sample.
So that was explained to me, because initially I told them, "Okay, if you give me the option, I refuse. I'm not giving my DNA, go to hell." And then some other guys came in to check on my welfare, is how they put it. And they came in and basically explained to me that because we're detaining you under the Terrorism Act, what is going to happen here is we'll call up a superintendent. They will give us permission to do it. We will drive you 45 minutes to the police station, get this done, 45 minutes back, and then conduct the interview. But you're not leaving without giving us this. So I just went, "Okay, fine, we'll do it here," rather than waste another hour and a half of my life.
I suppose it's kind of wasting their time as well.
They were seemingly kind of annoyed about the idea of having to put me in a car, drive me there, get it done, and drive back.
So therefore, I would take the view that, look, if I'm realistically, I'm going to get a taxi back from here, I will happily waste your time.
that's one way of looking at it. But after you've been up for 30 something hours and you're tired and you want to go home,
another thing I'm going to do.
It's not the mood I was in.
I'm going to do if this happens to me is I'm going to immediately go into Finnish and demand the Finnish translator in Finnish. In fact, no, I'm going to demand a Skolt Sami translator. And there's only about 200 people in the world that speak Skolt Sami.
And they all work for the British government.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. it's all around the Russian border, you see, the Skolts. So you've got all these people going back and forth with reindeer sledge full of bombs.
Have you seen Rupert Lowell talking about that? That you have people coming from God knows where, speaking God knows what language. And then the NHS is paying for translators for all of these different languages in every single hospital, just in case they have to deal with it. So I wouldn't be surprised if you demand it, they will have someone who speaks it.
My mother-in-law is a retired nurse, and 20 years ago, she was essentially the only person in her hospital that spoke English, and that included all the doctors and all the nurses. And so if there was ever a problem, they had to get her, if there was ever someone didn't speak Finnish or Swedish, because she was the only person that spoke English. That was how it was. Even her English was a bit halting. So, all right. So you shaken up at all when this was over, or what did you do? You got the long train journey back to where you're from. You were all shaken up. Did it hit in later, or did you just sort of remain stoical?
Yeah, well, it's not great. I took some precautionary measures when I got home to make sure they wouldn't get any more pictures of my life if they decided to raid my house or anything like that, because that's annoying. Like, just having someone else have access to your devices is not just them having access to your telephone numbers. It's all the pictures of your life, all the different things you've saved up, all the people you've met, memories you have.
Dick pics.
Yeah, any dick pics you got, that's going to be in there too.
You've decorated them elaborately as a dragon or something.
yeah, you're... I was going to say face painting, but it's not really face painting at that point. okay, whatever. So that was annoying. And then I'm just thinking mostly that I can't do my work. Like, this isn't just you've taken my holiday photos. Like, this is my livelihood. I'm not forced on a holiday 7 days to get it back. But the worst thing was really just when they let me go initially and I've got that 4-hour journey without a phone, which, you know, being a Zoomer is hell on earth.
Because you can't read. So, you can't get a newspaper and read it. Can't read.
So, why would you bother?
I can't get a book and read it. Can't read. So, 4-hour journey. Just sat there rocking backwards, making chess pieces of your own earwax.
Because I know you like to have a laugh at Gen Z people. I got to tell you, Gen Z Americans are a whole different breed. So there's two big things that stood out to me, that the Yankees are just different in this respect. So got on a plane. The flight is like 50 minutes. It's nothing, right? And it's a budget airline. So you can pay to have internet on your phone for this 50-minute flight. And every Gen Zer around me did. And then they all went on their phone and they were all just scrolling YouTube shorts. They paid money. They wasted money just so they didn't have to go 50 minutes without YouTube shorts.
Yeah, they wouldn't watch this because they have the attention span of a dog.
It's just incredible.
Except not a dog that's searching after something, but a dog that is being asked to read a book. I see it. I can see it's a problem, the lack of attention span of people that have never had to do things like look forward to next Thursday because that's when their favorite programs are and that's the only time they can watch it. And if they don't miss it, then if they miss it, then that's it. It will never be on again. They don't experience things like that. The waiting and the anticipation. No, it's just, it's all there now, but now on Netflix now. Oh, except when sometimes with something like Love is Blind, they divide it up in two and make you wait a couple of weeks so you don't unsubscribe. But
do you think like your grandmother or whatever, I don't know how far generations back, but they would have had the local cinema, and if they didn't see it when it was there in the cinema, that was it.
Yeah. Well, it depends. Some films would go on and on and on for years. Like there was that film about eugenics, something like Stain of the Blood or something it was called. And that was in the cinema.
Favorite film.
Stain of the Blood, and that was in the cinemas from like 1917 to about 1940 because it was so popular, and it's basically encouraging people that are dysgenic not to have kids. But then others, I remember even when I was a kid, if you watched a film at a cinema and you liked it and you want to watch it again, it wouldn't be out of Blockbuster Video for at least 6 months. So
here's one other thing about Gen Z Yankees that I think you'll love. So one of the problems we ran into is, I can't speak to how widespread this is, but we're in Miami. We go to a Starbucks. The service is terrible for other reasons. And my friend says to me, have you noticed that when you pay here with cash, you won't get the change back? They just round it to like the nearest dollar and just give you the dollar. I was like, you're kidding me. So I do, I pay with cash, and then he gives me a dollar rounded down. So I've lost like 80 cents or whatever. I'm looking at him like, are they allowed to do that? He says, no, it's not like a legal thing. The people they have behind the counter just don't know how to do coins anymore. So they just round it and give you the change, and then no one cares because it's only 50 cents.
I'm not surprised by that, because of course numeracy is associated with intelligence. And so if these people are stupid, then in the same way that you find on old censuses, when people are innumerate, they don't know how old they are. So they'll exactly, you say to your mother, what year were you born in? Oh, about the 10th year of the old king's reign. You know, they don't know exactly. When exactly? Oh, when the snow was melting. Yeah, no. And so you find that the ages of people on censuses, well, you know, it'll be the 1851 census and this person saying he's 58. Then it'll be the 1861 census and he's saying he's 65. Yeah, they don't know. They just get messing around. So that doesn't surprise me, the innumeracy, and also the lack of ability to. I mean, why do you learn to count? How do you practice counting and its importance? Big part of it is dealing with money.
And if you only ever pay with Apple Pay or a contactless card.
Yeah, you don't have to do that. Whereas when I was a kid, I was always taught check your change, and sometimes it's like, oi, 50p. And she, oh, I must have forgotten. Yeah, sure. do that every day, and you could buy yourself a house. A lot of days, but you know, you would. But anyway, going back to the topic at hand, this is what you call in a Shakespeare play the comic subplot. We're going back now to the serious plot. This is the comic subplot. This is like the mechanicals of Midsummer Night's Dream, what we've just experienced there. Now we're going back into the plot of Sebastian and Malvolio and stuff. No, that's Twelfth Night. Sorry, now we're going back into the plot, whoever it is, it's serious people. Why do you think that, I have a colleague who was stopped at the border and they didn't interrogate him, but they just stopped him. He turned up late at night. There was nobody else there. At the docks it was, and there was coming back from Ireland, and there was two police officers there, and they didn't take it, but they just asked him some questions, and that was good enough. They didn't take his for saliva or fingerprints. They just asked him some questions, and then when I said to him, well, God, why do you think? Because I've worked quite closely with this fellow. Why do you think? And they basically asked about me, or at least about things I've done. And I said, well, why do you think they've never done this to me? And he said, well, maybe they have, but you don't know they have. I might have been at, as it were, based events. And there are spies.
Someone there.
I know for a fact that I've had Hope Not Hate undercover spy at an event of mine. And he with a fake passport, so he must have been MI5. And he direct called Harold Shookman, although he was calling himself Chris Morton. And he looked sort of effeminate, and I actually said to people, I think he's a spy, but nobody believed me. I really did. I said, my colleague said he's got weak man vibes, and I think he's a spy. And
not I said, one of us, clearly.
He asked me directly, how many people do you think were killed in the Holocaust? And I was like, hang on a minute, you're either retarded or you're undercover. And I said... I believe it was the amount of people that were agreed upon at the Irving v. Lipstadt trial by both the defense and prosecution. And then that was that. And I was very careful around him, what I said around him. And in the end, when it all came out, they really didn't have, they, Hope Not Hate made up, said a load of things, but they couldn't about me, but they couldn't really prove them. And when it came to the burden of proof that the newspapers needed, like The Guardian, it wasn't there. They couldn't print things about, because there just wasn't the proof, because I was so careful. And so there could have been other people that I don't even know about that I've met at based events who are MI5, and they've talked to me. You know, this kind of thing could have happened. But anyway, why do you think what do you think you've done? What do you think are the series of factors combined which resulted in you being stopped?
So we can only speculate, because they never actually told me. They never explained. Nor did the line of questioning explicitly state as to what the problem was. I mean, for example, them being really interested in my trip to the US.
But were they really? Were they pretending they weren't interested in your trip to Afghanistan and Russia in order to throw you off the scent, whereas in reality, that's what they were quite interested in?
My point being is just it's just really hard to tell. The theories I've seen in the comments that are reasonable, that make sense. It seems to me the relationship with the Russian Federation is the biggest concern. The problem being that the UK government, for whatever reason, has decided that our fortune and favor lies dearly and explicitly with Ukraine winning that war. So, and for some reason, when Ukraine wins, they're just going to, I don't know, give us times 10 the money back or something. I was explaining to the police officers, like, when to ask me about their war for freedom, I'm like, how does this involve us? Like, for the Americans, it makes sense on a geopolitical strategy, but like the UK was so irrelevant. Like, after coming back from the US and seeing the wealth disparity between us and the Americans, it's got really bad for the average American versus the average Brit. And you just think, God damn, we do not have any kind of standing in the world that we thought we did. But
what do you mean? You mean the British are much poorer than the Americans?
Oh, hell yeah. Massively.
How so?
So, in terms of wealth, and you can see it visually in just the things we have, for example. So, for example, the cars are a massive thing out there for obvious reasons, but then the type of cars the average American seems to own are way better than the average Brit. You then have the houses themselves. Of course, it's a bit wonky because they have far more room because they're a big country, but it's allows them to have things like washer rooms where you've got a washer and dryer in just a room on the side, instead of in the kitchen, for example.
In Canada, they have mud rooms. It's a room. Yeah, it's a room. I've seen
it's
on
a room
the program
for mud.
Where you try and say it's a room just to put mud in.
So they also have air conditioning absolutely everywhere. The idea of not having air conditioning is like, were you an actual peasant? And I kind of get it. After being there for a while, I'm like, yeah, that is pretty weird that we don't have it. And you go to El Salvador and everyone has it. They ain't rich people. And yet they do. There's also small things like a garbage disposal. The idea of paying to have a garbage disposal put in a British sink, I think is, I don't know whose father would agree to that. It would be a rather odd thing to suggest, but everyone in America has them. And then
I don't even
say
know what it is. I don't even know
that.
What it is, mate. I don't even know what it is.
So you know when you crack your eggs?
Yeah.
And then you take the eggshells and a bit of slime and you throw them in the bin?
Yes.
But then it stinks. So then the bin kind of stinks of egg. So what if you don't want that? So what Americans do is they take the eggshell, they shove it in the garbage disposal, press a button, and it's just a big blade that cuts it all up. And then you run the tap, and it all goes into the sewage system.
That is
fine.
It's just decadent. I mean, no wonder. You can't be bothered to put eggshell in the bin.
Garbage disposal. Decadent.
Do they want their own arses? I mean, Jesus Christ. That is just decadent. All right. Good.
But that's That's the big cultural difference I'm finding, which is Americans will find inconvenience and then just how to destroy inconvenience so I never have to deal with it again. Whereas the Brits will go, inconvenience, put up with it. Anyone who doesn't want to put up with it is a pussy.
Yeah, I would concur. Although I draw a line at non-flush loos. I've stayed in places in northern Lapland where there's no flushable loo, and that's I can't deal with that. That's horrible. That's horrible, that is. I don't do that. Near where I live, there's a cafe in a forest, right, and there's outside loos that are non-flushing. I just hold it in for you. It's ridiculous. Just no way. You might as well just say piss in the woods. I mean, it's just disgusting.
You definitely know there's some Laplander who will listen to you say that and be like, oh God, he won't even take a dump in my hole.
Well, you get somebody.
Decadent,
what I got?
A man.
I made this brilliant comment on Twitter about how people said about how, oh yeah, well, they said, oh, why are you in Finland? Go home. And I said, well, I'm in Finland because your women are sirens that draw us in. And also we can give them things that you can't, such as witty conversation and not passing out drunk every night or something like that, which is just true. And then you had purity signaling English twats saying, how dare you say this? Oh, you're not integrating into the country. I'm going to purity signal because I sit behind a computer and I've achieved nothing in the world of baseness. So I'm going to purity signal. They'll do that about, they'll say, how dare you go to Lapland and mock the Sami's lack of a flush loo? Integrate.
Yeah.
Stop using a flush loo. Enjoy looking at other people's excrement.
When an American comes over here and is like, why do you guys have no air conditioning? This is horrible. Why do you walk everywhere? Why not just get a car like a normal person and get garbage disposal? And why don't you have a washer dryer? Oh, yeah, the washer dryers.
That is why we're not all fat bastards, because we move about.
But there's also, I got to admit, the washer dryers in the US seem to work way faster than our washer dryers. I think this might have something to do with the EU regulation. You know, the EU limits the amount of power you can use in everything. Yeah. And then they passed some legislation a while back that I know for sure applied to Hoovers. So when you're vacuuming up your dirt, right? The European Union decided that if your Hoover was too powerful, you were destroying the planet. So they limited the amount of energy your vacuum could use, which then meant you just had to vacuum for twice as long to get the same result. So it just was a complete inconvenience, pointless waste of time. But we still have to live like that with these crap Hoovers. Whereas living when you go anywhere else in the world, it's...
Living
it's,
back to the main plot of the interview. Sorry, we've gone off topic. But one argument I've heard proposed is simply that the vast majority... Just two things. One, the vast majority of people that these secret services stop are Islamic, which there should be, because 94% of terrorism incidents in the UK...
Are you ready for the future of the West?